She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And if I were you and I was a listener, I would take a deep breath, sit down, and get ready to think a lot, because our show today is going to be a mind blower. I am so not kidding. The show is made possible through the generous support of Goodwill Industries of Southern Arizona. Their mission is to provide services, training, and jobs to people with barriers to employment, all such a critical part of sustainability. Please remember that your donations to Goodwill create jobs. So the name of our show today is The Water Keepers Are Watching, and my editorial comment is, are they ever? And I'm laughing because I was preparing for the show and saying really important things to myself, like, wowza, and holy crap, holy, really cerebral thoughts like that. But our guest is a return guest. His name is Mark Yagi. He is the executive director of Waterkeeper Alliance, a group which is comprised of about 250 organizations around the world, and it is the fastest growing global movement for swimmable, drinkable, fishable water. Mark, welcome back. And I know you have lots of updates on major issues, so let's get started. I mean, it's like, are you sleeping lately?
Hello, Mrs. Green. Thank you so much for having me.
That is a breathless introduction, but
It's definitely been busy.
Wow.
For sure.
Let's just start for new listeners and our ever-expanding market about what is the Waterkeeper Alliance, and it's very important vision and mission to every single one of us.
Well, again, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on. And I wanted to take it just a second to congratulate you on your new book.
Oh, I love it. Thank you, Mark.
I'm taking a trip pretty soon, and I'm going to be reading it. So I'm really looking forward to reading it. Congratulations.
That makes me very happy, and thank you. And you will be laughing out loud because you do know me through the airwaves, and there'll be times when you're saying, that's so her. I can't believe she wrote it. It is a laugh out loud book. Okay, thanks, my friend.
Sure. Waterkeeper Alliance is an international movement uniting more than 250 locally based clean water advocates and focusing citizen action on the issues that affect our waterways, from pollution to climate change. And we have 257 waterkeeper organizations in 29 countries on 6 continents, and they together are patrolling and protecting about 2.5 million square miles of watersheds. And that is, they come from, like I said, 29 countries, so we've got groups in China, Bangladesh, Nepal, Iraq, Colombia, Senegal, Chile, U.S., Russia, the Czech Republic, and so they come from so many diverse backgrounds, but they all have this belief in common that everyone has a right to clean water, and they get up every day to go out and fight for your right to clean water for swimming, drinking, and fishing.
I was just going to say, it's the truest definition of what I would call an alliance that I am familiar with, because it's not like you're hiring and putting offices up all over the place. These are small and large and really locally based water watchers. Is that fair to say? It's a very different kind of structure.
Yeah, it's very grassroots. These groups find out about the kind of work that we do, or they learn about successes that someone else had on a nearby waterway, and they decide, hey, we want to stand up for our waterway and stand up for our community and make sure that our kids can go jump in a lake or jump in a waterway and swim without us having to fear that they're going to get sick, or that they can turn on the tap in their home and be able to drink a glass of water without it being full of poison, or that they can, you know, cook up a fish without worrying about it poisoning them. So those are people that stand up in their community. And you're right, they come from all over the place and of a different size organizations. It could be someone who's just starting out that's a woman or a man with a canoe in rural Alabama, to Hudson River Keeper, which was our first organization, which has a staff of about 25 to 30 staff members and a large budget and has a huge presence.
And, you know, it makes me happy anytime anything about the environment makes the news, ever. It's like, wow, they're actually talking about what's going on to our planet. But there's been quite a bit lately. I'd love you to talk. Love you to talk with us about the EPA's new clean water rule. We have the Pope making headlines about his climate change encyclical. Go Pope Francis! I mean, it's waking people up. So, what about the new EPA clean water rule? Is it? It seems to me, my opinion, okay, which I try not to do, weak. It like got diluted, and I said, "Am I really going to say that on the air?" But did I read it wrong? Is my research not correct? Is it a stronger clean water rule?
No, I agree with you. It's a complicated rule. It's the whole issue is very complicated about how they delineate and determine what waters are going to be protected by the Clean Water Act. But this rule is really what defines which waterways are protected under the Clean Water Act. And if they're not protected under the Clean Water Act, you might as well kiss them goodbye, because they can be filled in and polluted without any sort of regulatory oversight. And this rule it certainly has some good points. It provides more clarity on how these waterways are protected, which waterways are covered. But the problem is that it excludes a number of types of waterways and does so contrary to peer-reviewed science. And so that's problematic. It starts out, you can tell from the beginning that it's not going to be what you're looking for, because the very beginning of the rule, the preamble, says that this rule is going to narrow the definition of how many waters are protected. So it's admitting right up front that they're not going to protect as many waterways as they should be. So that's a challenge, and it really... it's got some industry exemptions that should make the coal industry happy and the agriculture industry happy. Industry is going to challenge the rule regardless, but these industrial exemptions are not we can't stand for them.
I'd like to read the quote that Peter sent me on your team. Very, very helpful research and information for a starting point for me, because you're doing a lot. But the Water Keeper Alliance says the rule doesn't go far enough and contains some very serious negative provisions, including not protecting streams and rivers that have historically been protected under the Clean Water Act. And here's the part that I want to highlight. Exempting industrial-scale livestock facilities, Gina's quote, Mrs. Green's quote, are you kidding me right now? And allowing streams and rivers to be impounded or filled with toxic ash and other waste. I'm like, what thinking, caring, consciously living human being is going to think any of the expansion of industrial scale livestock waste is going to help us? I don't know. I sound like I'm on a box on the corner at Wall Street and Broadway screaming. Like, is anybody listening to me? But what the heck?
Yeah, it's in livestock waste, especially the hog industry, all the factory farm pigs. Is the amount of waste they produce is amazing. The volume of waste of fecal waste is about 10 to 1 for hogs to humans. They've about ten times the amount of fecal waste volume. So imagine how much waste is coming off these sites. There are thousands of these factory farms in North Carolina alone. And it's wreaking havoc on waterways and communities.
And, you know, I invite you and I ask you as a friend of the airwaves and an ally in preservation of the planet. Last week I interviewed a woman named Sonia Faruqi, and she wrote a book that's coming out on the 15th. You can get it on Amazon, Project Animal Farm. And, Mark, I'm telling you, it was a tough show for me to do. She spent 2 years working on animal farms, and you talk about pig waste. Let's talk about the poor pigs. that live in gestation crates, and the only thing about their waste is it just gets washed away. They don't ever even move. They live in it, they breathe it, and then it gets washed away a couple of times a day. So, and going to our waters, that's very encouraging to connect that dot.
Oh, yeah, it's a tragedy, the stories that you'll hear about the pigs, the way they're treated, and then the people that live near them. You know, we have, I've been spending a lot of time with people in North Carolina recently and hearing stories about people that live near these factory farms. They're typically communities of color, often low income. Definitely, there are a lot of African-American communities around where these farms, industrial factory farms come in, and people talk about how these open pit lagoons, you know, they take the waste and they put it into a giant open lagoon. It looks like a massive Olympic-sized swimming pool, bigger than that, and it's brown, orange, it's very unnatural colors, and it's just full of pig waste. People live nearby, and they talk about how they can't hang their clothes out to dry because they'll stink. They can't, their eyes start to burn, and they feel like they're going to throw up when they walk out and they leave their house to go to their car. They can't have people over to hang outside and have a picnic. They've had to buy laundry machines because they can't hang their clothes out. It's really disrupting their lives.
It's not a smell, it's a stench. And what, you know, Sonia said, it just her going into those places. Like, I will never, I'm telling you right now, I will never walk into one of them. How it stays on your clothes, how it really feels like it's in the pore of your skin. It gets on your hair, and that's what's being picked up in our wind. And these people have to live with it. But let's talk a little bit about North Carolina. I loved I love these little things like ag gag. That's like a great hashtag. Hashtag ag gag rules that seem to be gaining support in places like North Carolina. You know, talk about it a little more, because what they're really trying to do is shut people up and take away their freedom of speech. That is, to me, the plain cut through all the hog waste, and here it is. It's, don't I have a right to take a video and send it to a newspaper or whatever the heck I want to do with it? They're trying to take that away. Is that an over-exaggeration on my very worked-up part?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, a lot of the industry gets away with circumventing the rules and skirting, or they get the reason why they're able to dominate the marketplace, and they're providing their product at a lower price than someone who's doing it the right way, is that they skirt the rules, and that's how they do it. And so they don't want to get caught, and so they're trying to influence. They pay off the politicians to pass the laws that will help them continue to skirt the rules and basically subvert our democracy. That's all that's happening. The rule, they have a law they were passing in North Carolina. Theirs was so broad, the ag gag rule. It's even broader than an ag gag rule. It applied to basically anything where you would be arrested if you took photo or video inside any sort of operation. So let's say, for example,
like a nursing home.
You're a child care center, and the child care people are beating the children. If you took a video of that, you could be arrested. How does that work?
How's that working for you, listeners, America, people that are caring about their basic inalienable rights? Yeah, you get a fine or arrested.
And they'll try to keep us from. They've certainly made efforts to try to keep you from taking photos from the air. And, you know, that's aerial patrols are incredibly powerful and useful. Just recently, we had, I guess it was probably about a year ago, by doing aerial patrols, I'm switching a little bit from ag over to coal, but we had caught through the air, Duke Energy was pumping the liquid, the toxic liquid from their coal ash ponds along the Cape Fear, a tributary of the Cape Fear River. They were pumping it out of the ponds into the canals that go into the Cape Fear River, which is a drinking water source. These are toxic coal ash ponds that contain chromium, cadmium, arsenic, lead, selenium, so a whole toxic brew of chemicals in these ponds. We caught them doing it by flying over it. We happened to fly over it and look down and see why they have this hose coming out of the coal ash pond and going into the Cape Fear. That those photos were actually used in the criminal indictment against Duke Energy that recently came down, where they were handed the largest Clean Water Act penalty in North Carolina history of $102 million, and they were guilty of nine criminal violations of the Clean Water Act.
So talk about a victory. I mean, I just wanted to see the silver lining. I mean, you're doing such important work. And when you said you caught them, were you looking for things, or were you doing, you know, basic research? How, set that up for me.
We do a lot of aerial patrols,
right.
And we had been doing aerial patrols. This was around the time that the Dan River coal ash spill had happened in North Carolina, where
right.
The Duke Energy coal ash pond had broke, contaminating the Dan River. So we were doing a lot of aerial patrols with that, and happened to go flying over around the Cape Fear in North Carolina, and noticed that hose coming out of the coal ash pond and going into the canals of the Cape Fear River.
And, you know, there's a lot of discussion in the news, not a lot. I certainly exaggerate. There's not a lot of discussion about the environment in any news from what I can pick up. And I mean traditional ABC, NBC, CNN. They're just not covering things to me that should be front and center every day. Not even MSNBC, like nobody. It's like crickets chirping. But anyway, when a country like Norway decides to divest their stock in any companies that are tied to polluting fuels, I mean, does it have an impact? Does it work? Why is it important?
It is. I mean, you know, stepping back, fossil fuels are such a dirty form of energy, and coal being the dirtiest. I mean, it causes devastation from extraction and then blowing up mountaintops, to then they're burning it, sending poisons into the air and into the water, and then the ash that they put in those ponds that then break open and go into our waterways. And so having a place like Norway, you know, we sent our global coal coordinator over to Norway to speak to members of parliament about the impacts of coal, along with a number of our partners who did. And we were thrilled when Norway, the Norwegian pension fund, the world's largest sovereign wealth fund, divested from coal. And it's a $900 billion, this fund.
Wow.
And so for that kind of a statement,
yes,
sends a message. And it's, you know, it takes a lot of divestment to really make a big impact, but you start seeing those messages and people hear that message, and it is coloring, it's helping to shape the view of consumers and understanding these issues. And individuals can do the same. They can divest. You can look at where you're investing and see if you've got anything invested in fossil fuels. You can both divest and then invest. You call it divest, invest. So take your money out of fossil fuels and put it into fossil fuel-free investments, which, by the way, will make you the same or better rate of return in most cases.
Right, the ROI. And I was actually talking with my daughter this morning before the show, and we were talking about the show. She's very much involved in every aspect of what Mrs. Green's World stands for as a living, you know, consciously living person on the planet. And we were talking about the conundrum of the use of fossil fuel. I mean, am I using it to keep my air conditioning on when it's 110 degrees? Unfortunately, I am. And it's, you know, our electric company, in my opinion, is doing everything they can to move the needle forward, building massive solar fields. But, you know, Mark, it's like when I want to walk the walk, I'm still turning the air conditioning on. I think it's a conundrum for people that really care and want to see changes.
It is. I mean, we still have to rely on fossil fuels because that's the situation we're in. Unless you're completely off the grid, which bless those that are. There are some out there, but it's not easy. I think we're in an interesting time, Mrs. Green. Frankly, it's a, you know, we know that fossil fuels are bad. 400,000 people gathered together on the streets of New York last year,
right,
to tell the politicians to say no to polluters and yes to people. And the Pope just came out with his encyclical, which is a really strong message to a lot of people. Norway is divesting from coal, as you mentioned. Paris is coming up. And there's so many things that are on that are demonstrating that a fossil fuel future is the right way to go. I mean, so look, solar, one of the great things that I think is an interesting fact is that solar power currently is about 1% or so of our portfolio nationwide, and
right.
coal's about 35%. Solar employs more Americans than coal
okay.
does.
Okay, hold that thought. Yeah. We're on our first break, which I can't even believe. Everybody stay with us. The Water Keepers are watching, and we're hearing about it from Mark Yagi, their executive director from the Water Keeper Alliance. Stay here with me. Lots more good stuff to share.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at mrsgreensworld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at mrsgreensworld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the Igloo radio app. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. We are a proud member of the Dream Vision 7, Glimmer Glass, Green Radio Divas, Blog Talk, and Speak Up Radio Networks. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@mrsgreensworld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World next.
University of Arizona professor John Pollard asked the students in the Posada San Pedro Hall to consider bringing solar energy to the dorm. Just 3 years later, the Solar Cats, a group of students who took up the cause, have installed 44 solar panels on the dorm, saving 20,000 kilowatt hours of energy and reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 14 metric tons every year. Talk about students with a sunny future. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks for joining us. This is the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. The name of our show today is The Water Keepers Are Watching. Our return guest, very, very busy human being, working on all of our behalf, is Mark Yagi, who is the executive director of the Water Keeper Alliance, a group which is comprised of 257 organizations worldwide and is the fastest growing global movement for swimmable, drinkable, fishable water. And that's really, I mean, that covers it all. Mark, thanks so much for taking the time to give us an hour to give us updates on all of these fires that are burning and good things that are happening. Let's just recap a little bit what you were saying about solar, because I don't want that message to be lost.
Oh, yeah. So I was just saying that I think we're in a really interesting time with all of the people that came to march in New York and with the Pope coming out with his encyclical, Norway divesting that huge wealth fund, the Paris climate talks coming up, and there's so much support and momentum now with so many facts on the side of a fossil fuel-free future. Like, the one fact I was saying was that while solar makes up about 1% or so of our energy portfolio right now nationwide, and coal makes up about 35%, continues to reduce. The solar industry employs more Americans than the coal industry does. And that's, you know, look at that, 1% of our energy portfolio employing more than the coal, which is 35% of our portfolio. That's a pretty staggering statistic. And it helps refute that whole argument that they always try to make about how we're trying to kill jobs when we want to shut down coal. Oh, you're going to try to kill jobs. That's all you're doing. There are no jobs in the coal industry because they mechanized the coal industry decades ago. Their whole thing was to get rid of jobs, and they wanted to turn it into something that's just run by machines.
And it's a lot of fear-based. A lot of what you're talking about is fear-based. Even the ag gag rules and stuff like that, it's like, don't think ahead to a newer, brighter, cleaner future. Hold on for fear of losing what we have.
Imagine, like, I don't know. I have to think about the future as a fossil free future because it's so promising. Imagine having free energy that's clean and provides, that doesn't pollute and poison our air and doesn't pollute and poison our water. It's incredible because I do this work for my kids. I've got two kids that are 7 and 4, and I don't want to leave them a mess to clean up or one that can't be cleaned up. And, you know, they deserve, and all future generations deserve to have the infrastructure like clean water, clean air, plentiful forests that support healthy life and will reward hard work and ingenuity. And so we need to be able to work hard to give them that future, and that kind of future comes without fossil fuels.
And you don't see a future for them of having to wear masks over their faces to keep the pollution out, to let them to be able to literally just breathe clean air, which is happening in some places. So from your perspective, really being a globetrotter on this very important issue of clean water, what happens when there's an oil spill in a place like Santa Barbara? It seems to me that, yes, that made national news because it was really starting to hit close to home. What's your spin on that and how it ties into our continued dependence on fossil fuels? Does it help move the needle forward?
Well, it's certainly another, it's a tragedy. Oh. And it's certainly another reason why. When was the last time, I've asked people before, when was the last time you turned on the TV or you turned on the radio and you heard the following story that a truck was careening down, barreling down I-95, went around a curve and spilled all of its solar panels into a river? You never hear that because they would just take the solar panels out and dry them off and then go install them on some building that would get free energy for the rest of its life.
You're right. I never heard that one. That's a really right? great analogy.
You never hear that story. But we have been now increasing our domestic production of fossil fuels and are going to see more and more things like what happened in Santa Barbara. I mean, we've had we're increasing the amount of fuel that we are sending through oil and gas, through rail, and through pipelines. Basically, since 2008, we've had a 4,000% increase in how much crude we're sending by rail. And the amount of accidents that are happening are staggering. Just like the spill that happened, the crash that happened on the James River in Virginia. There's a spill in on the Savannah River in South Carolina. They're happening constantly.
And I'm reading Sipora Berman's book. I'm sure you have come across her in your life. And she spoke at a conference I was at about 6 weeks ago at Social Venture Network. And it tied again the point you made earlier in the show about these, you know, the transportation, the rails and all that, they go through marginalized communities. It's like still the same thing about social justice, and it's ignored a lot of times because of that, because it's not disenfranchised, but certainly not powerful groups. But there's no oil spills happening next to my house from the train. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's true.
It's really true.
I mean, there are the low-income and minority communities typically face the greatest burden from environmental damage.
And what about the spills we don't hear about? Like things, I call them the things that go thump in the night, because occasionally I come across a story about how much oil is really seeping out under the ice in Alaska, the bleeds in the Gulf of Mexico. Can you talk about that a little bit, about the things that we don't see making national headlines?
Oh, yeah. Well, we have a lawsuit that we're doing right now in the Gulf of Mexico, and it's starting to get some traction in the media now. But it's been, we've had the case has been ongoing for at least 3 years or so, if I recall correctly, maybe four. And there was a well in the Gulf of Mexico owned by Taylor Energy, and it was damaged by Hurricane Ivan, which was in 2005. The well suffered damage, and
10
it's been
years
discharging.
Ago.
Yeah, it's been discharging oil every day into the Gulf since then.
And it's causing damage, and you're not hearing about it at all. So what happens? What are the judges saying? Where is it? Is anybody listening? Are you just spending more money?
You know, legal action takes a long time. It's a slow process. And so but there's been a flurry of action lately, and a lot of it is, We've been wanting to make sure that the public knows what's going on, and so there's a lot of legal wrangling right now over what documents can be public and which are not. And of course, we want to get as much out in the open as possible and shine a light on it.
Full disclosure: sometimes I really do think I'm living in America, the not so free. It's better yeah. than a lot of countries, but there's a lot of secret things going on and not enough being leaked to the public to keep us informed. And I just, you know, this just popped in my head. So are you going to meet with the Pope anytime soon? I want you to. And then interview on the show. I want to get him on the show.
That would be great.
It would be so great. Can you imagine? I mean, his English is not that great, but I could do it. I know I could make it happen. Let's go back he's amazing. I mean, it's like the Pope really making the news about things that are relevant and important and matter. It's very, very encouraging to me.
Well, yeah, and he's got a great voice for social justice. I mean, he understands that. He understands the maxim that money, power, and influence dictate who draws the short end of the stick. And he knows that you know, forcing people that don't have a political voice bear the burden of pollution, disease, and misery. And I think he understands that from what I've read in the encyclical.
I know. I haven't read the whole thing yet, because I had to get through Project Animal Farm and keep putting it down and taking deep breaths and saying, I just, you know, the cruelty and the filth and it was very upsetting for me to have to do that show. But anyway, let's go back to the social justice issue, because Sonia brought that up. A lot of my guests bring it up. We think we're talking about the environment and preservation of the planet. And to me, really, things like Bali, the Business Alliance for Living Local Economies, they're really including major conversations about social justice and fair wages and the reasons why these issues have to be included when you're talking about a sustainable planet, which leads me to your partnership with the NAACP. I mean, they're somewhat, on the surface, unlikely pairings, but when you go a little bit deeper, they're not at all. So can you talk about that partnership a little bit?
Sure. I mean, it's very similar to, it's along the lines of what I was just mentioning about how you know, money, power, and influence dictate who gets the short end of the stick, and it's often these low-income communities and minority communities that bear the burden and of environmental degradation. And you know, we had a really interesting case that I'd love to tell you about. Two things I would say about environmental justice, and one of them is this legal case, and that's last September, so nearly a year ago, about 9 months ago, we worked with some local, the North Carolina Environmental Justice Network and a couple other local partner organizations and Earth Justice to file a Title VI complaint with EPA, their Office of Civil Rights, where we made the allegations that North Carolina's failure to regulate hog waste disposal, you know, the big industrial factory farm hog waste, discriminates against communities of color in eastern North Carolina. And in February, EPA announced that it accepted our complaint, that it was going to then launch an investigation into North Carolina's practices, which we hope will significantly end up the way they permit these hog farms, and so that they can reduce the discriminatory impact on communities of color. We wanted to bring this issue to light more and quote unquote raise a stink about it. So we brought together, we did a rally with NAACP and other partners in North Carolina, community groups, the North Carolina Environmental Justice Network, in Raleigh last month in May. And that was attracted a lot of supporters, brought in a lot of the affected community. And to coincide with that, we launched a billboard campaign to raise awareness, because a lot of people don't even know, they live in North Carolina or anywhere else, they have no idea what is happening. They have no idea that these things exist. And when they find out about it, they're shocked and they can't believe it. I've had lots of people that we've taken and given them aerial patrols or showed them video or have them talk to the affected communities, and they're just in complete disbelief that this could still be happening in 2015.
And it's like people, I call it the consumer coma. If people only knew where their pork chops were coming from, they would gag. I mean, I'm so not kidding. It's like if you only knew, like, here's what you don't want to know. Open this Pandora's box. And I did the show last week, and then I went to a meeting, and there was bacon. And I looked at it, and I'm like, I am gagging right now. And it used to be one of my favorite foods ever. And all I could think of is, oh, my God, how this little piggy went to market is something I probably at some level wish I didn't know so much about.
Well, by having that knowledge, you can make better choices as a consumer.
I know.
But the interesting thing that you mentioned these about where your pork chop comes from, one of the really interesting things is that in North Carolina and other places, Smithfield Foods was bought by a Chinese company last year. It was approved by the Federal Trade Commission about a year ago. So what they're doing is they're growing these hogs in North Carolina, slaughtering them, and then sending them over to China to eat. So all we get is the waste. We just get the hog feces in North Carolina. They don't even get to eat the meat.
That is so disgusting. And when you talk about what they're doing with that waste, like to make it into food for other animals, I'm like, I don't know. I told somebody at breakfast yesterday, said, I looked up the definition of the word zealot, and I'm a little scared about my path. you just really don't want to see yourself as a zealot. I mean, I don't. I want to see, you know, myself as a thought leader and a movement maker. But, man, some days it's hard to not become a zealot and grab things out of people's hands and say, do you know what you're doing? You should not be eating that because it's making you sick and it's making me sick watching you. So there's my little rant. In terms of
well,
the...
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say it's we try to hopefully raise awareness and help people make good choices.
You know, with your mission of talking about, I love to talk about an organization. I just got asked to be on the board of an organization called SATO, which does a lot of work in the Baja and the Gulf of Mexico. And fishing is such a huge industry globally. And if we don't keep our waterways clean, the fish will die, and all of those people will be out of work. I mean, it's a food chain that is so interconnected that, you know, you think about fishing, and there's these great commercials about some dude fly fishing on a, you know, pristine river, and all I'm thinking is he's probably going to pull up a big plastic bag if he's lucky. It's like they're everywhere, and, you know, let's get the Fishermen's Alliance behind us, because they've got a lot of passion and a lot of money, and it's such at risk that it's really not funny, but it's I don't know, people aren't really thinking about it. What about, do you have any more unlikely pairings or partnerships that you want to talk about? And I just say, you wouldn't necessarily make the leap from Waterkeeper Alliance to the NAACP, and it certainly makes sense every step of the way when you describe it. Is there another unlikely or a pairing that you're doing that you want to share that people might not otherwise think about and associate with you and your important work?
Well, I think it's important to look at groups and organizations or companies that have common interests. And it may not seem like that on the surface that there's a common interest, but if you look into it, you can see there is a natural fit when you might not recognize it traditionally at the beginning. So I can think about when we all worked, a lot of groups worked together to get the Mercury Rule, which was the rule that would require power plants to significantly reduce mercury emissions from coal-fired power plants and other power plants that are discharging that dangerous neurotoxin into the air. And, you know, we partnered with the nursing groups, you know, public health and nursing groups, which you might not think of on the, you know, why is this water organization working with nurses? But there's a natural fit there because it's a public health issue.
Yes, yes. And another powerful group. I mean, they talk about being on the ground where the food chain and the pollution chain ends is in our health. It's, you know, it's a crisis. So that's a good one.
Well, I don't know if your listeners know this, but at any given time around the world, one out of two hospital beds are filled by someone who has a waterborne illness, meaning they, you know, contracted an illness from swimming in polluted water, they drank polluted water, some sort of contact with a water issue, or they didn't have enough water, but they have a waterborne illness. So 50% of all the hospital beds. That's a huge public health issue.
And I'm trying to write that down because that is a great tweet. I mean, seriously. It does get one out of two hospital beds are filled by someone who has a waterborne illness.
Yep.
Okay, I got it.
It's astonishing.
And I didn't know it, and it's shocking and really depressing. I mean, the statistic that I found when I was getting ready for my TEDx talk was every 40 seconds a child is diagnosed with cancer. I mean, and to me, those are statistics that actually get people's attention and make us really wake up and say, okay, what can I do to be a part of it? We're going to have to take another break. And when we come back, I'd like you to talk with us a little bit about your global view and where the U.S. stands on water policy in general. And should it remain in the federal domain, or do you see it more happening at the state level? So more of policy-driven issues. Everybody stay here with me. Mark Yagi from the Waterkeeper Alliance. You won't want to miss a minute.
Mrs. Green's world's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the Earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
At the University of Arizona, we're putting solar know-how to work. And it's not just our researchers. Our students are on the job as well. Our student solar racing team, using recycled solar cells from NASA, designed and built a car from scratch that gets the equivalent of over 3,000 miles per gallon. Talk about students who will go far. Really, really far. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And as I promised at the beginning of the show, so much to think about today. The name of our show is The Waterkeepers Are Watching. Our return guest is Mark Yagi, who is the executive director of the Waterkeeper Alliance, which you can find so much information about at waterkeeper.org. And it is a group which is comprised of 250 organizations, the fastest growing global movement for swimmable, drinkable, fishable water worldwide. I actually love saying that. And what does Mark do? Mark provides organizational leadership, develops new partnerships and growth opportunities, builds cohesion between the organization's wide range of programs, and promotes the Waterkeeper model of advocacy around the world. And in his spare time, he is the father of two. It's like, okay, sleep is for sissies, clearly. So, Mark, thanks for being with us. And let's devote this last segment of the show to really give the Waterkeeper Alliance its due, its role, and your impact on public policy. How are we doing as a country? I love to ask global leaders like you about that. How do we measure up with some of our brothers and sisters around the globe? We don't need to talk about China, I guess. But are there European countries that are getting our attention, good partnerships happening? I think that was about six questions. But pick the one you want. Pick the one you want. I want you to tell us a lot, Mark.
I think, you know, the U.S. has some of the best laws on the books. A lot of the other countries have modeled their laws on the Clean Water Act. And we have laws on the books that will protect our water, our drinking water, and the water we swim in, the water we fish in. The problem we have is that they're not being enforced. And if they're not enforced, they're not worth the paper that they're printed
right on.
So that's the big problem we have, is getting in. That's where we step in. That's where our water keepers step in. If they come in and make sure those laws are enforced, or they enforce them themselves, because that gives meaning and force to those laws. And they, you know, we're currently, the biggest problem we have is the erosion of our democracy and Citizens United and all of this money coming into the campaigns. It's crippling our ability to do really, it's crippling our nation and its ability to be a leader on these issues. I was just in D.C. recently and was talking to some senators and congressmen, and one of them had said that they feel really good that there's going to be some good things happening on climate change, because there are a fair amount of reasonable senators that believe that something needs to be done on climate change. These are ones that haven't acknowledged it. They're not necessarily deniers, but they're not being strong on it. That they believe in it, but they're like in jail. And they're trying to break out of jail, but they're being guarded by all these deniers who are armed to the teeth with weapons paid for by the Koch brothers. And so they're trying to figure out, how do we get these guys out of jail? Because when we break them out of jail, you know, things are going to start happening. But they're being held in right now. And that's a sad, you know, sad state for our country, that this Citizens United and all this money coming in from Koch brothers and others are impeding progress.
And it is the truth spoken into word. And I want to correct myself. It is waterkeeper.org is your website. So it's a content-rich, easy to navigate. You want to spend a lot of time on it, everybody. So check out waterkeeper.org. But back to this issue of they're in jail. So inside scoop for Mrs. Green was one of the conversations I was having with folks at the University of Arizona who, you know, we've had people here from the White House, people that have worked really inside and close to the president's desk that can talk about the Koch brothers saying to candidates, yeah, we're going to give you X amount of money, but you literally have to sign this document saying you're not going to speak out on climate change. Not a document that's public or that we get to read about, but right. Literally, that is a true Inside Edition story of how powerful that is, and the Koch brothers really, really wanting to control our world and our air and the food we eat. I mean, it's disgusting to me, and so true. So go ahead.
And that's why we have to really. It's going to come down to people power. And it comes down to the grassroots and those 400,000 people that marched in New York, and the people that are going to, you know, engage in activities this summer and fall is the lead up to the Paris Climate Treaty. I would thank you for telling people about waterkeeper.org. If you go there, sign up for updates. We'll be working with a great group of partners to distribute pledges to try to get a billion people to sign up to call for climate action. And it's going to happen from the grassroots.
It is. And I love what the messaging is on the website, because it's save your rivers, save our communities. They're my communities. And it's coming down to it's all about me. And I have to ask somewhat a political question. And it's not, you know, Democrat or Republican, but about politicians in general. It seems to me that there's a huge disconnect between what one particular party, I'm so transparent, says about less government, stay out of our business, we don't want the government telling us what to do, we need fewer regulations. And they're the ones that are introducing all these bills like ag-gag rules. I mean, do you find that in your walks on Capitol Hill, that it's such a contradiction to me. They don't want us to have the government in our business, but they want them in our business.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be in my business, but we want to be in your business.
Yeah, I find it ironic that the ones that say that we shouldn't be subsidizing renewables to scale them up are the same ones that are subsidizing fossil fuels, the oil industry, and the gas industry.
There's a real disconnect there for me.
Yeah,
real disconnect.
And they believe in the free market, but then don't require some of these corporations to internalize their costs. They let them put their costs onto society and make us all sick and make us all poor by enriching themselves. If it was a true free market, they would have to internalize those costs that they're imposing on us.
It's really, I mean, it's like going down the rabbit hole, and then I feel like I have to take a nap. I swear, it's like I just have to go to sleep now because I'm so depressed. Well, let's go get down to a really simple question, and it's one question. What does it take to become a water keeper? What is that process? You have 257 water keepers. What is that process?
Well, you've got to be someone who really is willing to stand up for your community's right to clean water, and is someone that has a passion for the waterway and a passion for everyone having a right to clean water. It's a really diverse background. You don't have to be a lawyer or you don't have to be a professional environmental advocate. Some of our best water keepers were lobstermen, shrimpers, former Marines. I had a shrimper with a ninth grade education. He became a really powerful water keeper because he saw what happened to his waterway. It destroyed his ability to be able to shrimp. And he stood up and said, I'm not going to take it anymore. This waterway belongs to the people, not to the polluters, and we're going to take it back. One of my heroes was a former lobsterman, and he's been protecting Long Island Sound for 25 years. And he, you know, saw what was happening with sewage being dumped into the sound. It was affecting the lobster catch and all the other issues, and he was willing to stand up and fight for it. So if someone has that burning passion and they've got a waterway that doesn't have a waterkeeper on it, they can contact us and contact us through waterkeeper.org, and we'll walk them through a process. They need to be able to demonstrate through an application, like they put together a proposal where they understand the cultural and the specific value of their waterway. They understand the threats that are happening to it, and they have an idea for an action plan of what to do. They don't have to have all the answers right away, but an understanding of where to start. And a willingness to start to build an organization that's going to be viable and it's going to be there for the community in the long haul. And they have to believe that the laws on the books need to be enforced, and they have to advocate for that.
And it so underscores. I mean, people tell me that listen to my show, they know when I'm ready to go on a rant about the power of the people. It is the individual's power that's going to shift the tide. It's going to be the tipping point. And, you know, 400,000 people were in New York. One of my team members, Amy Timmons, went there representing Mrs. Green's World. That and Woodstock are two of the biggest regrets of my life, tells how old I am, that I did not go. And hopefully I'll get an opportunity to be a part of such a big global message because of the work that I'm doing.
And you should go to Paris.
I should go to Paris. You should take me as your new Western Division chief. Announce that to your staff. We have a new person. And I was joking with you before we got on the air, and I said, you want to open a region in the Southwest? And I went, oh, that's right. We have no water. it's all right. Going to be going to California from the Colorado, you know, from CAP water. It's like we are in trouble. And, you know, I've had Gary Nabhan on my show, who's written only 28 books, such a slacker. And he, he talked about 2,300 counties in the United States right now experiencing severe droughts. So it's not just... It's not just about keeping the waterways we have clean. It's about keeping water. And to me, all of these pieces that you address are part of that big picture. Clean and safe energy, clean water defense. You know, I straight from your website, I encourage people to do it. If you want to know what you're about, it's very clear. Clear, clean and safe energy, clean water defense, pure farms, pure waters, and climate change. I mean, it's one big interwoven piece of really important global movements that we need to see happen. How do you stay on top of things? You, Mark, how do you stay on top of things? And then you said you're going to read my book, which I hope you meant.
Oh, I am going to read it. I am. Speaking of the global work is, you know, that's climate change is a big part of that. It's because it's going to come down to who has the water and who doesn't have the water. And, you know, where's the drought? Who has the heat waves? I mean, there's this epic heat wave going on in India right now with about 2,000 people have died last I checked.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. It's happening.
Pakistan has a heat wave. The southeast of the United States has a heat wave. There's people wearing bikinis on beaches in Alaska this week or last month even. We're already, you know, we're definitely on target to be the hottest year on record to date so far. And it's going to come down to who has the water. I'm going to be working in Asia later on this week. I'm going to go over to Asia. We've got a partnership with groups there. It's been really fun to watch this movement, this locally driven clean water movement expand globally from, I think, probably when we spoke last, it was probably last summer, we had probably about 200 and 19 water keepers in 24 countries. There's 257 in 29 countries today. And I've got proposals on my desk that I need to review. There are about five to seven coming in the next couple of weeks. I've got two on my desk for two new countries, one in Mongolia and one in Kenya.
Wow.
And headed over to Asia to work with a lot of Buddhists there over the next 2 weeks in continuing to build a network. They want to build a network of water keepers across Nepal, India, Bhutan to protect the Himalayas, the third pole, which is the Himalayan glaciers are the source of half the world's water.
And you know, in weaving it all together for you, that really you have to have a global view every day. Does the part, you know, the significance of the Pope and Black Lives Mattering and a sustainable and just wage, will they have significance at the Paris Climate Talks? Do you think they'll be important part of, you know, bringing the conversation to be top of mind for all of us?
I think so, because combating environment, social justice and extreme poverty is part of the climate change and the climate justice movement. And it's going to be, I think the Pope, I'm interested to see what kind of impact the encyclical has long term, because you know there's going to be a certain percentage of deniers that are just never going to change their mind. But there's got to be a wide swath of people that were maybe skeptical, or they were undecided, or they're being influenced by the deniers, but when they see what the Pope has to say, are going to really think about it. And I think that one of my favorite quotes is a recent quote from a friend of ours. His name's John Hope Bryant, and I met him in Georgia a couple years ago, and he wrote a book recently, and he, hearkening back to the ideals of the civil rights movement, he said, "We make America better, stronger, more resilient, more valuable, and more valued when the nation has the benefit of everyone rowing in the waters of prosperity, dignity, and human aspiration."
Like, did you memorize that? Because I could not write that down. You're going to have to send me an email. That's profound and important.
It's one of my favorite quotes, and I've committed it to memory because I tell everyone I can about it, because I think it's such a powerful and profound
quote.
It is.
It takes it all in, and it's really, really, really important. And please, if you do have time, just shoot me an email so I can write about that on Facebook or maybe do a short blog about it. It just really, really touches my heart. So can I go to Paris with you?
We're trying. I have a call about it this afternoon, so I will see what we're going to be doing, and we can keep in touch.
You know, I'm so not kidding, and I might be able to approach some of the people I've met at, you know, like Social Venture Network and the Business Alliance for Local Living Economies about sponsoring me, because believe me, I could be busy 24/7 taping radio interviews, and it would be just a really important way with what. How the message of Mrs. Green's World is growing, and how, you know, somebody told me the other day that I have a divine appointment. And I said, so that means I can't change jobs, right? It's like a divine assignment. I said, you're right, I do. I eat it, sleep it, and drink it. So everybody, check out, we have like a minute and a half to go, and I want to just ask everybody to go on to waterkeeper.org, consider being a supporter financially, because that always helps. I didn't even get into how you are supported. And if you can't do that, sign up for the newsletter. Sign up for alerts. Follow you guys on Facebook. Something to help everybody stay involved. I'm so proud of my relationship with your group, and you know I'll have you back. I'll be waiting for that email about my flights.
Excellent.
So next week, everybody, I do want to do a little shout out. We're talking with a guy named Jay Sinha, who's co-founder of a company called Life Without Plastic. And it's going to be another great show. And it ties into what you said, Mark, because he and his wife started this company because they got deathly ill from environmental disease. So it's all part of creating a global community of people who care about the planet. Mark Yagi, thank you, and everybody on your team at Waterkeeper Alliance. Make it a great green day, everybody.
Thank you.